It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, July 27th, and mergers and weddings are in the air. Did you guys see the big announcement Black Knight made? Acquiring Optimal Blue for $1.8 billion. Amazing deal. I looked at when the new PE firm had bought Optimal Blue from the previous one, and wow, they paid a lot of money for it. We'll see how that works out. I'd say it worked out. Lots in the news. Can't wait to get in all that's happening, but we're thrilled to have you here with us. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format. That's that listen to stuff, that old fashioned stuff. Do so anytime, anywhere. So today's podcast, we've got my good friend, Vince Parlove. So excited to have him on. He's United Wholesale Mortgage. He runs a division within the company of helping getting companies up and running. And Vince is just someone I've known for many, many years, have a great deal of respect for him. But he's going to come on and talk a little bit about how the heck are they doing. And if we were to believe Vince, and I do believe Vince, as I know this to be true because I know people that do business with him, they're maintaining turnaround times 48 hours and consistently through the growth. It's crazy. We're going to talk about that. So you're going to want to stay online, but it's talking about the researchers of the independent mortgage broker. Thought that was really interesting, especially with all the noise that's been going on with some posts that Anthony Casa did that were just absolutely insanely stupid. Anyway, we just are so excited to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. IndustrySyndicate.com. Check them out, as well as MortgageMedia.com. David Matthews and I are going to be recording another David and David session coming up here. Got some real interesting stuff to talk about. But before we go there, let's say a big thank you to our sponsors. So excited to have the Mortgage Bankers Association work. We're going to hear from Rob Van Rafforth, hopefully here in just a minute, as well as I want to say thank you to Finastra of Fusion Body. They bought my old software company that I started in my garage in 1978. They paid $1.3 billion, doing some great things. They're growing rapidly, and they've been centered more in the banks and credit union space, but you need to pay attention to what they're doing now when it comes to the independent mortgage banking space. So wherever you're at, bank, credit union company, or independent mortgage banker, pay attention. Go over to Finastra, Finastra.com. Also, Lenders One and Mortgage Collaborative. Great to be a part of both of these co-ops, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. I got a chance to spend time with Ed Wallace last week up in Nashville. We got a new client up there, and Ed just became the president of this new client and is just really excited. But he was at Community Mortgage Lenders. Really grateful for our affiliation with all of our companies. Of course, Indicom, if you're looking to outsource and find additional labor to help in handling these loads, you got to check out Indicom. Go to Indicom, Indecomm.com. Check it out, as well as Incelerate. Love what Josh is doing. We got him coming on here in a couple of weeks. Just tell us more about how to engage the borrowers and prospects of your customers and how to do it through really meaningful engagement. He's got some really great technology. Check it out at Incelerate. Incelerate. A special thank you goes out to Josh and the whole team there. Ainsworth Advisors, more and more companies are looking for who is your board of advisors, who's speaking into your business. It's good enough to have a great management team, that's great, but you better have a board of advisors. Who is yours? Check out AinsworthAdvisors.com. Great group of top mortgage professionals. One of the companies I own, very thrilled to have that going, and the who he's walking with me in that is just amazing. Gary Ort heads that up, previously with Texas Capital Bank. Also, artificial intelligence happening in a big way. So if you want a way to get up and running with artificial intelligence, especially when it comes to the marketing side, check out AI Assist. Also, check out Celebrity Home Loans. They're going through a lot of growth lately. I guess everyone's doing that, but he's doing it through acquisitions, as well as Knowledge Coop, as well as Mobility RE and Modex. Both of these two companies do a great job of helping you recruit LOs. And you go like, do I need to recruit anybody? Well, you better find out who's out there and find out if you're hiring someone who does what they say they do. That's where both Mobility RE and Modex do that. Check them out on our advertising page, as well as Velma, Vedrister, Vidyard, and we're grateful for all our sponsors. Really grateful to have Andy, Alice, Allen, and Matt with us. And we're going to get into the MBA Mortgage Minute. But first, Rob Van Rapport for the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob, what you got for us?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, Senator Bob Menendez introduced a new bill, S-4260, the Promoting Access to Credit for Homebuyers Act of 2020. The bill mitigates the economic impact of COVID-19 on the housing market and protects borrowers from additional pricing constraints on their mortgage loans. MBA supports the bill as it would not only promote continued access to credit for homebuyers, but also ensure the continued smooth functioning of the secondary mortgage market. The bill is the Senate companion to H.R. 6794, introduced by Juan Vargas and Maxine Waters. Under the bill, FHFA would direct the GSEs to purchase these loans and hold them in the GSEs' portfolios until such time that the borrowers are making regular payments and the loans can be pooled into GSE-backed securities. Congress is currently debating the next relief package this week. Also last week, FHFA proposed its 2021 housing goals for the GSEs. The goals required by law specify both the single-family and multifamily mortgage purchase benchmarks that the GSEs must meet each year with respect to low-income borrowers or borrowers residing in low-income areas. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
You know, anything we can do to help low-income borrowers, we need to be focusing on that. We need to get the first-time homebuyers in the market, and the home prices are going up. I was talking to a friend of mine in Arizona. And they're moving out of the starter home, moving up. And he goes, you cannot believe the offers that we're getting coming in. It's just crazy how fast they are. So get some inventory out there. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy. Come and listen to the story about a place named Bend. Poor rate control barely kept the yield curve bent. Then one day they were shooting for some bread, and up from the ground came a bubble in crude. The decaying U.S. dollar helps push yields below zero. After adjusting for inflation, negative yields and the falling dollar lift U.S. stocks and spark a rush to gold, even black gold. The last time gold reached record highs of 1920 in 2011, mortgage rates peaked at 5% and proceeded to fall to 3 3/8. Now, with gold's return to record highs, mortgages are below 3%. Investors' demands for yield change based on risk and reward. Yet the Fed buys and sells as if it knows all things. You better believe PhD.
The Beverly Hillbilly.
These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Love little old bluegrass music going there. Alice and I have that in common. We love bluegrass. Anyway, it's so much fun to listen to that music and get an update. And I love how Les mixes in economic data with the hillbilly song. Good job, Gary Ketchboy and Les Parker. I love the partnership you guys have, and I appreciate that segment. Good stuff there. There's a lot of good things I could go on now. Let's get over to Matt Graham. You got to check out this week's mortgage update. He's got mortgagembslive.net, and he's the newest contributor, doing a great job. Love the site. We were just talking about what's on the economic calendar. So what do we got this week? Matt, what you got?
All right. Well, hey, do you want to hear a quick recap of last week, Dave?
Well, yeah, let's go to that old news.
All right. Just real quick, yeah. Because we did have a nice bounce back in existing home sales, up 20% from the previous month on Wednesday. And that was really nice to see, although it has not caught up as much as, say, pending home sales or new home sales. And I think we talked about a few reasons for that last week. And it'll be interesting to see how pending home sales come out this week. That'll be on Wednesday at 10 a.m. because that is kind of an advanced indicator for existing sales. So definitely housing market staying a lot healthier than a lot of people thought it would be, given all of the coronavirus concerns. Low rates could definitely be a part of that, but I think you have a lot of pent-up demand that was on the sidelines in March and April that's now hitting the market. Stocks focused on earnings a lot last week, and also on stimulus and the trade, U.S.-China trade, sort of up in the air again. And that created some divergence between stocks and bonds. I think over the short term, a lot of people expect them to be moving in the same direction if we're talking about stock prices and bond yields. But a good amount of divergence there last week as stocks went higher right at the start of the week and bond yields kept going lower, ultimately hitting their best levels of the week after Mnuchin hit the airwaves saying that a payroll tax cut would not be part of this next stimulus installment. And bonds love that. The reason bonds love that is because the more revenue we take away from Treasury, basically, the more they have to issue in terms of Treasury debt, and more Treasury issuance increases the supply, lowers prices, raises yields. So yields fall when they are not so worried about issuance. Now, fast forward to this week, and we have Treasury issuance to worry about yet again. In fact, in the past 10 minutes, we just had the first major Treasury auction of the week at 1 p.m. Eastern time, five-year notes. And it was just a little bit weaker than expected, and we can see yields pushing higher across the board. That is not necessarily always going to be a big factor for the mortgage market. And indeed, MBS prices, mortgage-backed securities, are still slightly stronger on the day. So it's one in a list of things that have different impacts on the Treasury versus mortgage side of the bond market. And this theme about issuance is going to be an ongoing one, especially when stimulus is hashed out and we find out what the total amount of treasuries will be that need to be issued to pay for all the stuff we have going on. And of course, that's going to ultimately depend on coronavirus and how many people stay out of work. That will continue to be our dominant market mover, but we're noticing some interesting things going on both this week and last week in that we have other things starting to vie for market movement to have a vote in how bonds are going to move from day to day. We had really been focused on coronavirus, and that will continue to be the case, but it seems that we're in a bit of a lull right now, and that has allowed things like the stimulus conversation and trade, and to some extent, maybe the mood at the Fed to have more of an impact. So the mood at the Fed is an important topic for this week, because on Wednesday, we have the new installment of the Fed's policy announcement. We know they're not going to do anything with the Fed funds rate. We know they're not going to do anything with the bond buying program, which has been very supportive for low rates. But the verbiage they choose and the way that Powell answers questions in the press conference can shape the narrative, can let markets know how the Fed is feeling. Because we really want to know, hey, if the numbers start to say that we're pulling out of the pandemic or things are improving or people are going back to work, just how supportive are you guys going to be? Are you really going to keep buying treasuries and MBS until you're really, really sure that we're really, really recovered? Because that's what they're saying right now. I think markets have their doubts in a scenario, for instance, where we get easily back under 10% unemployment. And let's say the economy starts to look 80 to 90% as good as it was before coronavirus. Does anybody really believe the Fed is still going to be buying almost $100 billion or more a month of treasuries and MBS? I think a lot of people think the Fed might take their foot off the accelerator faster than they're currently telling us. But we understand they're telling us that so we can have reassurance. And so a confidence crisis doesn't have a chance to exacerbate the economic malaise brought about by coronavirus. By the way, it's month end too. That can create a little bit of random volatility in bond markets as money managers have to adjust their portfolios and match certain benchmarks heading into the end of the month. It's one of those unseen hands that can have a market movement impact that sort of defies explanation and logic unless you are just going to say, oh, well, hey, that must be month-end trading. And then earnings, of course, will continue in stocks. We haven't seen bonds too concerned with what stocks are doing, but it's a big earnings week and the earnings reports get bigger right around the time that we get the Fed. And then the following morning when we get the first reading of Q2 GDP. And this is the GDP report that everybody's been talking about since coronavirus started doing what it was going to do. So we'll get to see, is it going to be that 34% decline that is forecast? And what are markets going to do with that? Because traders know it's going to be bad. We can assume they've accounted for the fact that it's going to be bad. So let's see the extent to which they've actually done that. And if the number is a surprise, is that going to matter? Or are they just going to write it off and say, okay, yeah, we knew that was going to be bad. Let's focus on the road ahead. So from an economic standpoint, that's what we have coming up. Again, GDP on Thursday, but then we have pending home sales in the Fed on Wednesday. Auction cycle will be wrapped up by tomorrow afternoon. And then from a technical standpoint, last but not least, really interested to see if 10-year Treasury yields are going to break below 0.58%. That's a level we've been watching for months now as the bottom of the range. Who really cared if that was the bottom of the range a couple months ago? Because mortgage rates and MBS were so drastically disconnected from treasuries that we didn't really care. But now we're seeing that relationship largely restored and very much leveling off in terms of the spreads between mortgage rates and treasuries. Those spreads are higher than they were historically, but I think we can assume they're going to be a little bit higher indefinitely until we make it through the pandemic. The important thing about those spreads is they've gone flat for weeks now. And because of that, we can pay more attention to what treasuries are doing as a guidance giver for the broader bond market in terms of longer term interest rates. So if they're unable to break below 0.58, and more importantly, if we see some sort of negative momentum coming back in the other direction, pushing yields back up, now we have a little bit of potential upward pressure on rates. Mortgage rates don't need to move quite as quickly because I think lenders have hit the brakes as we have gotten down to levels that are very, very close to suggesting that people that just refied in March are going to need to refi again. And I don't think the mortgage industry really wants to cost itself that much money in terms of lost interest and early prepay penalties, not for borrowers, but early payoff costs that are passed along throughout the industry in various ways. So yeah, I'm seeing more limited potential for rates to move aggressively lower right now and a little bit of risk that they might see some upward pressure. But as always, the proof will be in the pudding and we'll see what we see after we see it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I got a text message from one of my old clients and good friends, and he's out of the industry now. He says, can you believe I locked in a 2.65 30-year fixed rate? And another guy was on the email trail, says, I just got 2.35. It's like crazy. I think it's distinctly possible we could see it go lower and we could have another round of refinances. Again, it makes economic sense. If you're going to stay in the home more than 7-8 years, it makes economic sense to refinance anytime there's as much of a 3/8 of improvement. You can regain the cost of it, back at the cost of refinance. It's just crazy. Wow. Good job.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Love your screens. I have it up all the time now. What you're doing is just excellent. I encourage our listeners to check out MBSLive.net. And take advantage of the extended free offer that Matt and company is doing for our listeners. So if you put in when registering at the sign-up code, you put in LOL and doubles your trial period and no credit card is required. So good job, Matt. Appreciate the partnership. And I love what you're doing. I'm glued to this thing, especially at different times. I love some of the commentary. I don't have to have any other TVs on. I just have this on. And because you've got the partnership with CNBC, so you put in their commentary. Really good job. Love your site. Encourage everyone to check it out. Have a great week, Matt.
Thank you, Dave. You
bet.
Appreciate
it. Alice Alvey is here with us live. Alice is a CMB Vice President, Master CMBA, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's legislative update for us. Alice, you're going to get a chuckle out of this. I was telling about what you and I did at Radius Financial together and how we worked together, and they said, how much would it cost for us to hire Alice? You don't have enough money because Bill knows what he has. He's a smart man, and he's paying her very, very well.
Yes, I love Union Home Mortgage. It's a wonderful place. Well, that's very flattering. Yeah, it was lots of fun. I do recommend that for folks. I mean, Radius is a great shop also, and the fact that even folks who work that well together recognize just to have a different perspective, have someone come in from the outside with a new set of eyes really does help the organization and take it to new levels, which, hey, if we're in for another refi boom, we're all going to need. Port here, Dave, we have two big things going on. First of all, you heard Rob mention about we now have a Senate companion bill for a House bill that was already out there, came out just a couple months ago. We weren't sure how much momentum it was going to get, but now once you get a Senate companion bill, you really get the confidence that this change in legislation will come to be. So here's what this really means. Rob says it kind of fast. I'll give you a little longer version. So today, if we have a borrower who goes into forbearance, we can't close that loan, right? Or if they go into forbearance right away after we close it, we now have a problem in pulling that together in a security. So this bill would dictate to the Federal Housing Finance Agency, who oversees Fannie and Freddie, and FHA, so that's another component. Both groups would then have the ability to pull these loans into security. So the fact that FHA would be mandated would have a trickle effect into Ginnie Mae's, which as an issuer, that is a different set of issues and procedures that will have to be addressed. But in both cases, you'd be able to put the loans that are in forbearance into a special pool. They wouldn't be able to allow the increase in a G fee. They wouldn't be able to impose additional requirements. And so the legislation, I think, to Rob's point earlier, is one the MBA supports and has some good parameters around it to make sure that, yeah, they may allow purchases of these loans in forbearance, but what's the cost going to be? And the legislation does put parameters around that they wouldn't be able to do that. Now, it doesn't stop the agencies from still needing extra parameters around income like we're dealing with trying to document self-employed borrowers today. But a good step forward to be able to open up the markets a little bit that are jammed up for borrowers, and the extra reps and warrant concerns that lenders have today with a borrower who might decide to go into forbearance the day after they close. So it's a good piece of legislation that we would like to see go through. The second thing is that there was a virtual hearing the other day from the U.S. District Court of Maryland, and this was the first time that the Trump administration addressed reports that the Department of Homeland Security was not accepting applications for DACA residents, despite the June 24th Supreme Court ruling that ordered that the government start accepting them again. So the Supreme Court ruling was just simply addressing procedures. This is just about procedures, and that there has to be some resolution to the procedure part of this. Mm-hmm. And so this particular ruling that came out the other day was simply the Trump administration has 30 days to readdress what are the procedures, because there are some estimates are 700,000 plus DACA visas out there that are really just sitting in limbo today. So if the program is going to end, then what's the reasoning? What's the planning? Finish the procedural aspect of it. And so for those of you right now who are still looking at different ways, how can you close a DACA loan? It's way back up in the air again, and we're just letting you be aware of that. So we'll see what happens at this stage. So that's my heads up for today, Dave. We don't have a firm solution. We'll keep watching for it, and I'll put a shout out to being members of the different Mortgage Collaborative, AMC, and other groups who can keep you updated on those types of things in real time as well.
Thank you. Appreciate you being nice. And here's what's going on out there. Good job. Thank you, Alice.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very, very much. Let's get over to Alan. He is here with us from Open Close, and we're thrilled to have him here. So, Alan, what you got for this week? Update.
What's happening? It's a great week. So here's the headline. $1.8 billion, which you already mentioned, augmented reality in Google. So let's get into it. I got to tell you, $1.8 billion, it is absolutely crazy. A definitive equity purchase, says Black Knight. They're going to merge it together with Compass. So it's going to be Compass Analytics and OB together. It's going to be a newly formed entity with other minority co-investors, Kanay Holdings and Lee Partners. But Black Knight will own 60% of the new entity. So hats off. That's definitely going to take some time to put it all together. I know they're already integrated together, but Black Knight is onto some cool and interesting things. So, David, Amazon Alexa now talks back. This is so important. Forget about the fact that some people may be kind of eerie of having Alexa, right? Let's just get past that for a second.
Right.
You think about where we need Alexa to go. If we were to have Alexa, Alexa's now asking the questions. And so they're called hunches. They were introduced 2 years ago, but they only came to market now. And they're things like she's anticipating, like, did you remember to lock your door at night? Or did you forget to turn the lights off? It's just the beginning. Think about how that's going to be part of your everyday life and how it can be part of acquiring consumers and holding on to them during the mortgage process, servicing, loss mitigation, you name it. So take a look at it if you're interested, if you're thinking of the Amazon Alexa or the voice assistant world. That's a really big deal. This one, David, augmented reality, the other head topic. This is really cool. For anyone that watched baseball as it opened up this weekend, you would have seen fake baseball fans. And a lot of people are kind of freaked out. It's by a company called Pixotape. They're the same ones that did the Weather Channel when they had those crazy visuals where the weather reporter was on. So they call it augmented reality, and it still needs some work, but they're sticking with it for now. And they're going to try and make it work. So it's a new norm that we're dealing with. We'll see what Pixotape can do. It's actually not just Pixotape. There's a bunch of other companies, but augmented reality is such a big deal. You and I have talked about it in the past. It's going to come into mortgage and real estate. I can give you 20 ideas of how we can do unique things in our industry with augmented reality. And in a way, David, take what augmented reality really is out of the picture for a second. We've got real estate agents with Microsoft Teams and Zoom and everything else walking through houses and giving virtual tours. So we're not that far away. And talking about virtual tours or Microsoft Teams, get this. The NBA is testing a brand new feature by Microsoft Teams. We all can test it. It's called Together Mode, and it's using AI. It takes a segment of your face and your shoulders, and it places them together with other people. It goes in a big virtual space, and there's these giant 17-foot tall LED screens that wrap around the arenas, and they put fans and players next to each other. But the fans can react in real time, and the players can see their reaction. So we always think about us, but what about the player? So very interesting. So you want to check that out. It's a brand new feature that they have called Together Mode. So many years ago, when I was in the pricing engine world, we did a deal with Google, as many other people did, and we basically had to create billions of data together. They did it, but we provide the data so they can do mortgage pricing. Well, they took a twist on it. They're back in the mortgage game. They did a deal, a partnership with the CFPB, It's like the hottest search term, which is how to buy a house. What is PMI? Should I refinance? What is an APR? And so they now not only have the questions and what they call mortgage lingo, but they also have average rates for purchase, for refinance, all different kinds of loans. It's instant. It's fast. Just like we all love Google Flights. Same kind of thing. You want to check it out. When I Google, I remember them saying they wanted to deliver pricing results in 0.01 seconds. So check it out. It's instant and there's no leads or referrals in there right now. It's just the Google piece. So it's not necessarily working against us. It could be working for us a little bit, but you want to check it out. And then I've got stuff I'll push off to next week. The big one that I wanted to talk about was CTO versus CIO. That was a really big deal, but I think it needs more conversation. But there's a couple other just little things in the news. This one was really cool. We love those Housing Wire Pulse articles. One of them was called How the Best Lenders Implement New Technology. Now, it's from last week, but you want to Google and you want to read this. It's called Seven Steps Your Comprehensive Implementation Plan Should Include. I'm only going to read you two of them. They're two most important ones, but there's seven of them. You want to go check it out. The first one, of course, is assemble your implementation team. I can't tell you how important it is to have the right people that are part of that team and they stay with it from planning to success to tracking and reporting afterwards. And then adoption strategy. Those for me are the two biggest ones. There's seven of them. Go check them out.
That's
and
good.
And the very, very last thing I want to mention, David, as we leave is MBA has a webinar called Five Strategies for Growing Your Consumer Direct Inbound Sales. Go check it out. It's Thursday, July 28th. You want to sign up. You want to go watch it. It's Michael Hammond does it. And then we'll have some great stuff next week.
Good. Yep. Yeah. We're talking to Michael. We're trying to get a couple of his people on our podcast, some customers he represents.
We love Michael Hammond. He's fantastic.
I want to give a shout out, Andy Schell. Good to have you here. But before we go over to you, we got to talk about your wife, Teresa, because she does a lot of implementations and she does a really good job of it. And I know she's worked with Alan and the team there at Open Close, as well as many others. So yeah, shout out on the implementation front. Teresa does an awesome job. Tell her hello. And
Teresa is fantastic, by the way. Yes.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Dave. She views conversions like the Marines in battle. There's never a man left behind. She makes certain that everybody understands what's next, how to fix it, when you have a question, how to ask. So that's how you get buy-in, right, Alan? You get buy-in by people being able to be successful using the new technology. And unless you go through this process of integration and unfreezing, refreezing, you just don't get there. So it's a long process, but when you do it right, it can really work for a company.
Yeah, sounds really good. Call Andy to get a hold of Teresa.
So Dave.
Yes.
This week is servicing again. It's servicing again. Last week, we had servicing webinar, and in two more days, on Wednesday, we have servicing webinar. Guess how many people we had last week? We had 500 people.
Wow, Andy.
On a webinar for the MBA. And this week, maybe even more. So we talk about important things. We talk about what's the biggest secret about servicing. Does anybody know the biggest secret about servicing? It's over four times more profitable than origination alone.
You would never get that. Would never, never, never.
No, exactly. So another important element of servicing, another secret of servicing is about precision. Alice and I often talk about precision. We all talk about precision in mortgage origination and the importance, but there's still a lot of fuzziness or flexibility, branch to branch, processor to processor, not in servicing. Each task in servicing is highly orchestrated. It's precise. It's a design that all fits together. And we talk about that on the webinar. So for the listeners that want to know the purpose and process of all servicing functions, whether if you have a subservicer or you service in-house, join the webinar. And if the listeners are members of the MBA, it's free. Zero money. No reason to not sign up. It is wildly profitable, but it's hard to do. You got to make sure you do it right the first time. You don't just casually get into servicing. Servicing is a firm commitment, and it's an essential component of any origination activity. You need to be able to say, borrow here, pay here. And servicing also creates this natural hedge where when rates go up, servicing cash flows extend. So it offsets the origination activity. And having a strong origination activity means you get the MSR recapture process. So it's cool. It's awesome. I've been in servicing for over 40 years, and I'm still excited about it when I talk about it. So go to MBA.org, education, sign up. Love to have everybody there. If you have questions about servicing you want to ask me or you want to ask Teresa, it's andy@mbsfteam.com or Teresa with an H.
That's good. Excellent. Yeah, check it out. MBA, the servicing webinar. It's free. Appreciate you, Andy. Thanks so much, everyone, for being here for the first part of our podcast. For those of you listening live, just stay right here. But for those of you who are listening on a downloaded basis, we're just going to move right in live into our Hot Topic segment. But we want you to stay tuned. Joining me on today's podcast is Vince Parla. For those of you who are not listening to or watching this live or watching this on a recorded basis, Vince is standing in the middle of this awesome office with thousands of people behind him. The masses are out there. They're all working social distancing properly, wearing the masks, working together, and they're getting loans done at a rate that is insane. Come on, give me the number. What did you fund last month and what are you targeting to fund this month? How many billion?
So I think it was 16 or 17 billion last month. And I think we're kind of crescendoing back up, but I think we should have over 90,000 loans that we'll underwrite this month, submissions.
Well, I'm so glad that you're on here because we're all dealing with record volumes. And I want to get to what you're doing in the broker program because it's an awesome program. But first of all, I want to talk about how the heck are you guys doing this? I want to talk about the systems. I had the privilege, as I got to be come in and fly in and be with you live. I was there with that handsome self of yours and the whole team and sat down with Pat Ishbia and the whole group. If you haven't ever met Vince Parlov, meeting him is like sticking your fingers into a light socket. All you do is you just feel let it charge.
Let's go. Come on, get it going. That's it.
He does not set ADHD on steroids. But anyway, let's talk about how you guys are keeping up with this volume. 90,000 files. We talked another time recently, and you talked about you hired like a ridiculous number of underwriters. And you're in Detroit, and this is a work in an office environment, which means there are not that many underwriters in the market. So how did you hire them? How did you create them? What's going on in that?
Yeah, and normally we're working office. Obviously, we're doing all the safe things that are out there in regards, like you mentioned, the social distancing and things like that. And actually, people have an option right now to come in or work from home. But it's in our DNA to be in here, right? We like people. We got a million plus square feet of space for folks. We're up to 6,200 people. When the pandemic hit, Matt went out and said, "Hey, listen, we're not going to lay anybody off, and in fact, we're going to go on a 1,500 person hiring spree." And I think we're probably going to land about 1,700 when everything's all said and done at the end of August.
Wow.
So and that leads into why we can handle that type of volume because we're overstaffed by design. You'll hear this from Matt and all leadership through in and throughout is that we don't sit there and say, "Oh, well, we should have 100 underwriters to do that." And then if they work a little bit of overtime, no, we go get 125, and then that's how we roll.
See, I think one of the things that a lot of people, this industry is, you've been in this industry for a whole bunch of years. You worked at a lot of great companies, some which I've had the privilege of consulting to. So shout out to your previous employers. We won't mention them by name. They're great companies and great people and all of that. But most companies, I would say 90%+ of mortgage companies in the industry hire at the need or behind the need. Yeah. That's not the way UWM does it. You hire ahead of the need. Talk about that. Yeah. What's the philosophy behind that?
The philosophy is to be overstaffed by design. But I mean, it's just there's so many different opportunities in here. And some people may come in as an underwriter in operations. And we have people that are moving around. My team's grown exponentially because of good people that we brought in that have come through the operations piece or the sales piece to the operation piece. So you're not just limited to, one dimension around here when you come in and maybe your resume just screams operations. But we found great salespeople out of there. And really, it's the contrary, right? Good, salespeople their whole life that have moved over to the operations side. But no, you're right. There's some people out there, but really think about it. I mean, when the volume hits, it's too late. I mean, you can't hire then. I mean, when somebody walks in here, I don't care how good you are, and we're pretty damn good. It takes 90 days for people to kind of get ramped up. And we have a specific training program we put people through, and it's training. It isn't like sitting next to an underwriter. She'll show you her way and things like that. We have classroom, right now it's virtual classroom style training that we bring people up through. It's cool stuff. And that's really how we roll.
I love how Matt and you coach. You're a sports nut. You love sports. You kicked my butt on the whirly ball court. You have to understand that, folks. If you don't know what whirly ball is, you got to get out there and go up to Michigan.
Look it up.
It is fun. Yeah, you're a sports nut. Matt's into coaching. He was a basketball coach. Talk about the coaching that you guys do once someone's on board and how you raise up people. That is such a great story.
Yeah, so coaching's always going on, right? I mean, it's you kind of breed from a athletic state of mind, the competitiveness and things of that nature. We have a program here that we call Big, but I mean, we get a lot of folks, and actually we have folks that come in just in that program, and they're it's a 1-year program where they go around to every aspect of this organization and do different things, right? And really get ingrained in the team. We got a team right now that just left today. We're getting ready to start another one on next week, and then we take a break and we have one the 17th. But it's just things like that. They're always going on that we're breeding folks. You know, we don't typically go to the sector and hire underwriters and steal from each other, because that's how a lot of other people do it. Yeah. We bring people in that have the work ethic and the right attitude, and then we show them how to do mortgages.
Yeah. And that's so important. You grow your people. I mean, and you grow up. I got to tell the story. When I was there in December, I've shared the story with you. I want to share it with our listeners. The thing that impressed me the most was one time, first of all, your sales meeting. I mean, how many people that went in a normal non-COVID thing, does that thing seat 1,000, 1,200 people or something?
Probably close. I would say 900 anyways, and typically 900 are in there. And we have people that are in training, because we have we train outside people through a program called Success Track that hundreds, if not thousands of people that have already been through. They're in that meeting too to see our culture, right? Matt runs that meeting. He comes in, he starts it, and he finishes it. And then we have our sales leadership team in between, you know, talking about what we're working on, new things that are coming out. You saw it firsthand, but you know, we open that up to the folks that are our partners and let them see that.
I have a client that went through your Sales Track program, and they said, "Look, and you got to join us. You got to see this thing." And I go, "I know it. I saw Matt at the annual conference." He says, "Look, come on up. We'd love to have you. You guys were a client at one point in time, long ago. So once a client, always a client. I always say UWM is still a client." But what the things that impressed me was, first of all, that meeting. But what really impressed me was this story. I was after one of the breaks. I was in using the men's room, and there's a guy walking through with a spray, and he had to be African American. A guy just had this big smile. He's carrying a new roll of paper that he's going to put in one of the for the drying in the hands and things like that. And I go, I saw him go through, and I go, "Wow, you look happy." He says, "Are you kidding? How could you not when you get to work at a company like this?" I go, "I've never heard a janitor talk like that." Here's the other thing. I would remind him to come back to what he said at the end of the sales meeting that we had. Yeah. So he comes through and he says, I said, "Why are you so fired up? I didn't say you're a janitor or you're this little guy. I mean, a janitor." And he says, "No." He says, he can't remember. "I am an engineer or custodian," whatever it was, made some good title for him. He made it feel good. You guys made people feel good. He says, "But here's the best part. If I keep this bathroom and the other hall bathrooms clean on this floor, I get to come up and I'm going to be an opener someday." Matt promised me, Matt. He didn't say Mr. Ishmael, Matt. His promise, "I get to be an opener someday." This guy was so excited. I love a culture where you elevate people. You bring them in at any level where they're at, and you elevate them. Going back to the sales meeting, the last words Matt said is, "Remember how you got here. Go find someone in the organizations that's on the journey up and speak a word of encouragement." While I was there, I watched many guys, obviously it's just men in the men's room, guys come up to this guy and go, "Hey, you're doing a great job. Keep working. I can't wait to see you on the opening table." They knew his goal. They knew his name. They knew his kids. Everyone takes an interest. That's a culture that is so extraordinary in this world where it's up over the top. So I love the culture. We could go on and on and on again about that, but I want to get into what you're doing, Vince, and talk about this. First of all, tell our listeners, what is the division that you run and your responsibilities there?
Yeah, the wholesale development team. Yeah. And let me come back to that just real quick, but I want to pile on to what you said. You know, we have four senior vice presidents in sales that report to the Alan Badoon, who runs all of sales. One of them, Anthony Frederick, has been here this week was his 26 year anniversary.
Wow.
He started up opening mail 26 years ago in the mailroom, and now he is a senior vice president of sales. Okay, so
I love it.
I mean, those are great stories. And when we were talking, I was getting goosebumps, because it is the way of life around here. People come in here and they hear the stories. There's folks watching, listening to me on this right now, because they know it and they got their stories and they're chuckling. I can see their faces. You know what I mean? They're chuckling about how they've come up through here. So it's really good. But getting to our team and segueing into that off of that, I wanted to make sure I
I'm glad you piled onto it.
Yeah, yeah, is our wholesale development team. So we formed this team 2.5 years ago when I came on board, and there was a vision by Matt and myself that obviously the broker world was, you know, starting to get more market share when the whole world fell apart. It went from 50% to 9% or 54% to 8% or whatever number you pick. But it went from middle, half the volume out there to single digits in market share. Now we're up above 20%. But right. I mean, that's where it sits, and we're helping that. I mean, the wholesale development team helps folks come from retail to open their own shops, all the way from we have a system where you name your company, get your business bank account, get your EIN number, which is your federal tax number, and then we help you through that whole process. Then we feather you into getting approved here, and then we feather you to your AE in that order to give us loans here. But it's not, people are like, oh, what's in it for you? How do you get paid? We don't ask for any money to do this. We don't ask for any things of that nature. We want to help the sector. We are through in for the broker, by the broker.
That's your model. Yep.
The best place to work is with the independent mortgage broker, and the best place for a consumer to get a loan is through an independent mortgage broker, because they're fighting for you, right? If my rates are off at UWM, I don't get the, just because I'm this good looking doesn't mean we get the loans, right? 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 No, that's
hard to believe, but that is true.
That's hard to believe, right? No, but we got to get in the ring and fight with everybody, right?
Yeah.
We do this. People like, well, I have one guy break it down for me. Let me get this straight. You do all this, and then at the end of this rainbow, you get in the ring with all your competition, your Calibers, your Quickens, your Flagstars, and everybody else, and you got to fight for that loan? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If we're all
we do it
that loan.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do it for free. That's what I love about this.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that, Bob. So this is for someone who might be a loan officer at a bank or off somewhere inside of an existing company, and they get the itch. They get the entrepreneurial itch to start their own company. That is the group that you help primarily. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And let's just take it full circle here, David.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why people went back to the retail world is because the whole broker model blew up. We didn't know how to pay anybody. We didn't know how to get a loan through the system with the new disclosure process and moving from a HUD-1 to a LE and the CD and kind of moving through that. We were stymied on the lender side of that. And that's why everybody went back to the retail side. Well, now they're migrating back to the broker side. We're seeing it. I mean, every single day. I mean, my team of folks right here are taking on 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15 calls a day from folks. We call them money calls, because when we have somebody call in and we give them the information to start their own company, it's a money call. We have fun with
it.
We keep track of money calls, and we have 50, 60, 70 a week.
Wow. These are people that are looking to get out and set up their own company, their own mortgage brokerage company. Let's talk a little bit about the anatomy of this brokerage. Tell me a little bit of what they look like. What's the right one to make that transition? And what's the right one to go, no, you're not ready yet, or this isn't a good move for you? Talk about that.
Yeah, and we have an avenue for that too, and I'll get to it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
In a second here. Yeah, so but you're right. So we've this team right here now, I think team to date has helped close to 1,300 people get to that dream of owning their own company, right? But we probably got a couple thousand people waiting in the on deck circle to do this, but at different phases of what's going on. Some people call up and they're like, "Hey, I heard about this." Some people call up and say, "Hey, listen, I already formed my entity. I already got my EIN number. I already got my business bank account. What do I do now? I'm stuck.
Right.
Where do I go?" And things like that. So folks are coming to us at all different, a year and a half ago,
stages.
Every call was, what do I do? How do I do it? You know what I mean? So each one of those 1,300 people that we've already helped plus are folks in, there's 1,300 different walks of life that they came from. They came from retail. They came from a bank. They came from a credit union. And now they decided that they just want to be a one-man show. I talked to them 6 months later. They go, "Hey, I have four people that I used to work with came aboard. Now I'm managing four people." And then there's people that come out of the gate that want to have all these branches and a multi-state platform. They're like, "You know, I looked at that. I'm good. I'm doing 15 loans a month and I'm sitting here in my, I can work out of my home. I mean, I got a better work-life balance. I'm spending more time with my wife, my kids, my family and things like that. And I'm doing 15 loans a month," because that's what we've done. We've led the industry in regards to these guys being able to get loans done quicker, faster, more efficiently by wrapping it with our technology, which is second to none. Second, third and fourth place are probably 15, 20 links behind us when it comes to that. But that's the anatomy of folks, that there isn't one just like one size fits all by any means. There's 1,300 sizes.
Well, when you're serving the size of the audience that you are, talk about products. And I mean, how much of a challenge are, do you guys say, now this is our, you came to pizza place, we serve pizzas here. If you want a filet, you got to go down the street. I mean, do you, how big is the smorgasbord and how do you manage the menu and what goes into that? Trying to be you try to be all things to all people?
No. It's in our repertoire, even at the director level here, is that we're 640 and above conventional FHA, VA, and USDA. People
That's
are like, hey, why don't you, you know, people are always asking us, why don't you do this? You're great at that. Why don't you do this? No, nope, this is our lane. We stay in it. We fight to stay in it.
That's a good way to put it.
Because people want us to go outside this because they want to be able to wrap our technology around non-QM, around jumbo. We do some jumbo stuff too and some high balance nationwide, but that obviously that product right now is pretty much on hold. And I mean, probably for one day to come back, but just on hold right now. But so that's our deal. We play a couple instruments. Great. We don't play 30 kind of good.
That's really good. It's a great way to put it. I think it's so important to do that. And you guys play amazingly well as a team. We talked about the guys that are a loan officer or something like that, breaking away. Are you seeing any trends, Vince, where some of branches of significant of some size breaking away and coming over to UWM or going out on their own as a group?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that. We're seeing that. I think it goes in clumps, right? We see a bunch of one-man shops kind of come to us. And we always get our fair share of that. But just recently, we've fielded a half a dozen or so calls. And I say just recently, in the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks, where people are like, I need to move my team. Because they think the frustration out there. I think some folks out there, lender-wise, they're like, we got 40 underwriters. We got 25 underwriters. We're not hiring anymore. If you guys bring more business in, it's just we're seeing people closing loans in 30, 40, 50, 60, 90 days. We're hearing people can't hold 60-day locks. We're closing loans in 12 days. We're getting a loan in here and getting a clear to close to our broker community in 12 days.
That's 90,000 loans were underwritten this month.
That's what we're on pace for. Over 93. We might be closer to 95, but 90,000, I think we'll be there.
What's the average underwriting time for those 90 plus thousand loans, did you say?
You submit a loan. We're just a tad bit over, I think, 12.14 days to a clear to close. We track to a clear to close. Now, if it takes another week for the broker to close it, Lickin is clear to close. I mean, if your title company can't do it or your closer or whatever, that's on you. But we're ready to rock in 12 days.
So from time of submission, if the broker gets it into your system, that starts the clock.
That's
12 and a half days later, you're ready to close.
Yep. You got it.
I can only imagine why you're getting so busy when you maintain that level of service. It's just crazy. Some people say, but I give up control. I want to go be a full banker. I mean, do you have any type of delegated program there that people can get into? Talk about that.
Yeah, it's a big piece of what our pie is. We do have a non-delegated. We always want to underwrite the file. That's us.
Right.
We're not going to ever go to a delegate. Never's a long time, but I don't think it's in our repertoire to go, you know, to a fully delegated buy and hold loans and things like that. That's not us. But non-delegated, we will do it, and we got a whole team that does that too. We're all about teams around here. You know, Chad Osterhaus runs that for us. He's right here, kind of linked up with our team, and he does a bang up job. Him and his team. He's probably got 20 or 25 guys that just do the non-delegated correspondent. And that includes banks and credit unions too, because there's a lot of that business out there too. So
how many employees do you guys have right now?
I think the number is, it moves. I mean, this could be the beginning of the week or end of last week, but I heard 6,200, I think was the number.
Wow. 6,200 employees.
Yeah.
So that's hard to maintain relationships. When someone starts doing business, let's say just within your group or someone within the company, do they deal with the same person or are they dealing with how many underwriters? I thought it was 3,000 underwriters or some ridiculous number.
I think underwriters, I think I would probably say we're probably that 1,300-1,400 person range, but in that whole operations, I set up people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's maybe the number that you heard specifically with the underwriter title. It's probably in that 1,300 range, but so when somebody comes in here, they get what we refer to as a pod. So they don't get the same person every time, but they get the makeup as they do business with us over a long period of time of getting what that pod does. You know, let's face it, everybody has their own kind of their own flavor, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
And things of that nature. So at least you get the flavor of that pod, and it's not like you go into a pool of one of 1,300 people to underwrite your file. So no, that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, where do you see this going, Vince? Is the trend more towards this, towards the broker model? We were at one point in time where it represented nearly 50, someone said nearly 60% of the business of all loans were originated were going through the wholesale channel in the previous cycle before the housing crisis. Are we ever going to see it get back to that kind of level, in your opinion?
So we had a team goal of getting to 22% this year. We're halfway through the season and we're at 21.6% market share. That's first quarter numbers that we just got, I do believe. But so 21.6, so we'll hit that 22%. If we start going in 2-3% clicks a year, yeah, I think really I'm feeling it, the folks that are really, really buying into that this is back. I think people were skeptical right in the beginning. Ah, geez, my God, that was a sad time in my life. I had to strip my whole world down, right?
Yeah.
And go back to the retail piece. So, you know, that's what it is. But no, do I think it's going to go to 50? That's a long ways away. I mean, do I think we're going to go to 25? Yeah. Do I think, you know, is 30 in our crosshairs? Absolutely. Yeah, and then let's talk again in a year when we're at 30, and we'll talk about
that. We'll go back. We'll definitely have you back. I just love having you on, Vince. I love the energy. What's your shirt say? Never relax. I love it. That is never relax. You don't either. You are a maniac. I love you like the brother you are. Yep. You're just so fabulous. As we wrap this up, what would you say to the industry? What I love about Matt and your whole company is you're so willing to share the knowledge. The time I was in, there was a whole bunch of lenders in there. Matt opened it up, let me go anywhere, talk to anybody. Yeah. And he knows I'm a consulting in the industry. I was so impressed. It was a smart move for him because I saw something special that I just quite honestly haven't seen many, many places, if anywhere. Maybe one or two companies almost have what you guys have. But what is the thing that you would say you would recommend the industry to have for success? I would love to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, it's a great. So listen, I mean, obviously we're getting more dynamic with the market penetration that we're getting on the wholesale side. I mean, folks need to take a peek, lift the hood, take a peek on what's going on over here. And I think it would be good, even if you don't have any intentions of coming here today or tomorrow or next month. I think it would be wise for you to,
take a look at
what's going on. I mean, right now we got a lot of these companies are slow to react, but we got the 15-year rates in the ones.
What?
30-year rates in the twos. Yeah, we got 1.875 on our rate sheet right now for a 15-year. But I mean, there's other companies that are starting to come on. We usually lead when this type of stuff. I mean, and people are eating that up. So now you got a 1.875 loan that you can do a 15-year product on in 12 days.
That's crazy.
I've
been at this for 47 years. I never, ever envisioned we'd see rates under two.
Yeah.
I believe it. It's crazy.
So peek under the hood. Call us up. I mean, get a hold of me.
How can people get a hold of you, Vince? What's the best place for people to reach you?
Just hit me. It's pretty simple. vparlove@uwm.com. vparlove@uwm.com. It gets you to me. We got a lot of folks coming in here. I'm on the phone. I'm helping folks as well. We got a whole team of people over here. We'll get you handled. We'll answer your questions. This isn't a buy one jiu-jitsu knife and for shipping and handling, we'll send you another one at all, right? That's not us. This is a process. And I always tell people when they call in, your process is our process. If you're just peeking under the hood, let me give you some information that you can roll around in for a couple weeks, a month or something of that nature. And then we'll follow up with you because I'm going to tell you, it's going to tempt you. I mean, when you're sitting there, you can't close a loan for 60 days and you're blowing locks and you're losing referral partners and you can come over here and close a loan in 12 days. And a lot of our competition is better than most of the retail folks as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful, right?
And it's
pretty powerful.
It's very strong. So vparlove is the best way to get old. vparlove@uwm.com. All right. Man, thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate the hell out of you, David. Always enjoy being on your podcast. And if I can ever do anything for you or anybody that you're working with, you let me know.
I love that. Folks, take him up on this. Look under the hood. Take a look. I tell people, if you don't do anything, just get in and take a tour of this facility and the attitude, sense it, take it back to whatever you're doing. And they're not going to complain. Matt's all about sharing it. Vince is a part of sharing it. Get a hold of them. Yep. Vince, thank you so much. I appreciate you, sir. You're the best. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, I just love those guys. Great interview. Thank you so much. Check it out and take them up on their offer to go out to their office. All right, that wraps up this week's podcast. So grateful to have you. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, the CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, Modex, and there's a whole lot more. Check them all out on our sponsor page and encourage you to support our sponsors. Get out there and talk with them, interact with them, and I think you'll be pleased with what you'll hear. So thank you so much. Good to have you here. Have a great week, everybody. I look forward to having you back next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.